Do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. So let's walk through these different roles and the way that they interact with the Christian family. Okay, first, children, verse 20. If you're a teenager here, you're probably thinking, I'm not a child. This doesn't refer to me. So the actual word children literally means offspring. And John MacArthur is right when he says that it refers to any child still living in the home and under parental guidance. So teenage children, this is talking to you. This is talking to you. It is talking to stepchildren, foster children, children who entered a family through adoption, biological children, legal guardians, children under grandparents' care, on and on and on it goes. I would say that this directly applies to you as long as you are dependent on your parents or your guardian. So just so you know what that means for our teenagers, as long as they're paying the bills, this is you. This is you. The moment you're paying rent, and not just rent like, give me $5 a month, honey, rent. You're really paying rent. You are no longer dependent upon them. When that happens, then your relationship to this verse is a little bit different. You're still called to honor your father and mother, but you are no longer called to obey them in the same sense. Okay? So that's the first role, is children. Second role is parents. Parents. Verse 20, and this is referring primarily to biological mother and father. Okay, but we can apply this to step-parents, foster parents, adoptive parents, legal guardians, the whole list. It can apply to any of us that are raising children. Okay? Now, the role of parents, not just in the Christian home, but in the American home, has been forgotten in recent years. So there's a man named Joseph Epstein. He wrote an article in the Weekly Standard about 10 years ago. And I want to read a portion of it to you. But first, we're familiar with monarchy, right? Rule by a king or a queen. Okay? We're familiar with patriarchy, rule by men. Hierarchy is the order of rule. Anarchy is no rule. Joseph Epstein talks about kindergarten, which is rule by what? Children. In other words, parents who have forgotten what parents are supposed to be. Okay? Listen to what he writes. This is not a Christian. This is just a thinker in American life, wrote this 10 years ago. In America, we are currently living in a kindergarten under rule by children. People who are raising or have recently raised or have even been around children a fair amount in recent years will, I think, immediately sense what I have in mind. Children have gone from background to foreground figures in domestic life, with more and more attention centered on them, their upbringing, their small accomplishments, their right relationship with parents and grandparents. For the past 30 years at least, we have been lavishing vast expense and anxiety on our children in ways that are unprecedented in American and in perhaps any other national life. Such has been the weight of all this concern about children that it has exercised a subtle but pervasive tyranny of its own. This is what I call kindergarten. Dreary, boring, sadly misguided kindergarten. Now, if you don't agree with Epstein, let me ask you this. In your opinion, are parents more or less stressed than they were 30 years ago? Let me ask you a follow-up question. Are children more or less safe than they were 30 years ago? Or 50 years ago? Or 100 years ago? Children are very safe in our world today, especially in the West. They're very safe. The likelihood of a child dying young used to be this stuff happened all the time. There were some cultures where children wouldn't be even named until a certain age because you didn't want to get too attached in case they died young. In our culture, it's unheard of. It's a tragedy when a child dies young, and yet parents are more stressed out than ever. Can't let my kid eat McDonald's, don't you know what happens to those nuggets? Right? After 5 years, they're still fresh. Can't let them eat McDonald's. I got to make sure that I get all the right pictures for my Instagram and my Facebook of little Johnny having fun today. Look at all the moms on Pinterest and all the crafts that they did. I got to do those. I got to make sure my kids get all their shots or make sure they don't get any of their shots, depending upon where you are in that camp. I got to make sure they meet all of these standards, and I read this in Parenting Magazine and this in Children's Magazine and this here and this there, and there's 1,000 books with tons of advice, and all I am is increasingly stressed out. Kindergarten. Parents, sadly, not just in the church, but across the country, have forgotten their role, who they are, as leaders in the home. But notice there's a third role in the text, and that's fathers. Fathers. Now there is one sense in which this verse can apply to both moms and dads. Look at the verse 21. He says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." Okay, just so you know, dads are not the only ones that can provoke their kids. Okay? I know plenty of moms that are really good at provoking their kids. Now, dads are good at it too. But this can apply to both moms and dads. But Paul addresses fathers here because fathers are pace setters in the home. Here's what I mean. Dad, you set the pace for family life in a way that mom doesn't, or maybe is not able to. It's not to say that men are better than women, that men have more influence than women. It's not to say that at all. But it is to say that God has so gifted fathers, He's so created them in such a way that they have an outsized influence in the home. And this is not just your pastor telling you this. This is borne out by years of research. For instance, David Pompano, the professor of sociology at Rutgers University, said this: "We should disavow the notion that mommies can make good daddies, just as we should disavow the popular notion that daddies can make good mommies. The two sexes are different to the core, and each is necessary culturally and biologically for the optimal development of a human being." Moms and dads are different. Or Brad Wilcox, professor of sociology at UVA, wrote this: "Criminals come from broken homes at a disproportionate rate. 70% of juveniles in state reform schools, 72% of adolescent murderers, and 60% of rapists grew up in fatherless homes." He also reports, Wilcox, that 35% of girls in the U.S. whose fathers left before age 6 became pregnant as teenagers. 10% of girls in the U.S. whose fathers left them between the ages of 6 and 18 became pregnant as teenagers. And only 5%, get this, only 5% of girls whose fathers stayed with them throughout childhood became pregnant as teenagers. Now, please hear me. I'm not saying that a child growing up without a dad is doomed to any of these things. What I am saying is that God has so ordered the family that moms and dads have crucial roles to play, and a father is incredibly important in the life of a child. It's not to say that biology is destiny. It's not to say that your upbringing determines the way that you live. You do have choices that you can make, and so do your children. However, the value of a dad in the home, dads, your value in the home cannot be overemphasized. Fathers. And then the fourth role in the text is Lord. Look at verse 20. "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." You know what the word Lord means? It literally means boss. Ruler. Hey, this is really helpful to remember. Young people, teenagers in the room, you are not the Lord of your home. You are not the Lord of your home. The children that were just dismissed to head to their classes, it might feel like they're the Lord of the home, but they are not the Lord of the home. Fathers and mothers, you are not the Lord of the home. Jesus is the Lord of the home. Remembering who Jesus is and this whole dynamic of the Christian home is absolutely essential. Children obey their parents because Jesus has called them to. Children honor their parents even into adulthood because Jesus has called us to. Parents lead their children well because Jesus has called us to. Christ is preeminent. And all the relationships follow. So if Jesus is Lord of your life, He's Lord over your family too. Remember your role in the family. Second thing we need to remember is our responsibility in the family. Okay, so verse 20. What's the responsibility? Children, obey your parents. Children, obey your parents. What was the word that was used for wives in their relationship to their husbands? Submit. The Bible does not say, wives, obey your husbands. It does say submit. But it does say, children, obey your parents. So let me remind you, submission is a joy-filled, voluntary disposition to yield. It's a heart attitude to yield. But obedience is quick, complete, heartfelt compliance. Children, you need to see this. God is calling you to obey. Here's what we tell our kids. The first time, right away, with the right heart. That is what obedience is. Obedience is right away. So on October 22nd, 2013, a 13-year-old boy named Andy was walking through a vacant lot in Santa Rosa, California. He was carrying an airsoft pellet gun designed to look like an AK-47 assault rifle. He was approached by a police officer from a distance. The officer thought the boy was carrying an AK-47, so he shouted to him to drop the gun. Instead of obeying the instructions immediately, Andy Lopez raised the toy gun. He was shot 7 times and died immediately. Now, I am not saying that this boy deserved to be shot. Okay? There's a whole different topic there about police shooting. This is not what we're after here today, but here's what I am saying. First time obedience could have saved that boy's life. Children, when God calls you to obey right away, it is not because He's trying to oppress you in this slavery of submission and obedience to your parents. It is for your good. Parents, when you expect your children to obey right away, you are not being a hard-nosed legalist. You are caring for their good. Young people in the room right now, how many times do your parents have to tell you to do something before you obey? How many times? Can I tell you, if it's more than once, it's too many. Delayed obedience is disobedience. Can I just say this to everybody here in the room? The same goes for your relationship with God. Delayed obedience is disobedience. When God calls you to do something, when He tells you to do something in His Word, and you say, I've got time, I'll wait, I'll do it later, you are not delaying your obedience, you are disobeying. Obedience is right away. Obedience is all the way. In our house, sometimes the instructions we give our children are very simple. For instance, I might say to one of my children, stand up. And some of our children will try to get as close to obedience without fully obeying. So you might see something like this. And that's the obedience to stand up. Okay? This is a deliberately slow, not quite all the way obedience. Okay? Do you remember King Saul? the first king of the nation of Israel. And God tells him, I want you to destroy the Amalekites. Destroy everything. Save nothing. And Saul does most of it. But when Samuel the prophet goes to visit Saul, there's a bunch of sheep in the background. And Samuel says, did you obey the command that the Lord your God has given you? And Saul says, yes, I obeyed. And Samuel says, then what is this bleating of sheep that I hear? In other words, you obeyed partly, but you did not obey fully. And Saul says, well, I was going to sacrifice it to the Lord. And you remember what Samuel says to Saul? To obey is better than sacrifice. Saul, you've obeyed 90%. That's disobedience. Christian, and your relationship with God, 90% obedience is disobedience. I'm not saying that we must obey perfectly in everything, but we must obey truly. God calls us to full and complete obedience. And when we stop short and say, I'll obey Him in all these things, but that, we're disobeying Him. Children, young people, when your mom tells you to clean your room, you really clean it? You clean the 90% that you can see and stuff the other 10% in the closet. Now, it's easy for me to say because I was the nerdy kid that folded my dirty laundry before I put them in my hamper. True story. That was me. Who am I? Jeez. But certainly, I can think of countless ways when my parents would call me to do this or that, and I would obey in the things that were visible. I wouldn't obey all the way. Obedience is right away, all the way. Young people, are you obeying completely? Or are you only obeying a portion? That is disobedience. Obedience is all the way, right away, with the right heart. There was once a little boy who wouldn't stay seated in his class. So his teacher sent him to the corner and she required him to sit there. When he finally sat in the corner, he muttered to himself, I'm standing up on the inside. Right? For him, he was able to comply outwardly, but his heart was rebellious. That, friends, is disobedience. We need to get this, brothers, sisters, and friends. This is true in your relationship with every authority in your life. If you obey with grumbling, with bitterness, with complaining, with backbiting, you have not obeyed. You have disobeyed. Young people, when your parents tell you to do something, do you snap at them? Do you roll your eyes? Do you slam the door? Do you mutter under your breath? That is not obedience. Christian, do you obey God complaining? Do you obey Him with grumbling? Do you obey Him dragging your feet, making sure everybody knows how hard it is for you to obey your God? If that is your attitude and your obedience is disobedience. Obedience is all the way, right away, with the right heart. So here's the question that maybe some of the young people are thinking. How often do I have to obey? Don't you love the Bible? Because it answers so many of our questions. Look at verse 19 or verse 20. Children, obey your parents when you want to. Now, children, obey your parents when they're around. Children, obey your parents when they make sense. Children, obey your parents when they're smart. Children, obey your parents when they're cool. Children, obey your parents when they're Christians. It doesn't say any of those things. What does it say? In everything. Children, obey your parents in everything. Even if the instructions are uncool, inconvenient, difficult, painful, even if mom or dad is not a follower of Jesus, you are still called to obey. You say, is there ever a moment where I'm not supposed to obey my parents? Yes, and that is only when mom or dad commands you to do something that directly contradicts what God has already commanded you in His Word. Acts chapter 5, verse 29, the Bible reminds us that we should obey God rather than men. So young people, if mom or dad command you to disobey God, disobey mom and dad. But other than that, you obey them. You say, that's hard. What did Jesus say about following Him? Did He say it would be easy? Young people, those of you here in this room that are young people still at home with mom and dad, if you claim to be a follower of Jesus, this is what Christians look like. Christians do not look like people who at one time at a VBS walked an aisle, prayed a prayer, and got wet. Christians look like those who obey mom and dad, who live for Christ, who follow Him, not perfectly, but truly. Is this your life, young person? Is this you? Is it you? That's the responsibility for children. What about for parents? Parents must lovingly lead their children. The command to lead, it's not explicit, but it's implied in verse 20. So the very fact that God calls children to obey means that He's also calling parents to lead, right? The implication of verse 20, parents must lead. Moms and dads, those of you that call upon the name of Jesus, those of you that are disciples of Christ, that are followers of Him, that are Christians, we ought not to give in to kindergarten. You are called to lead. You are called to lead. So parents, tolerating delayed obedience in your home is not grace. It's laziness. Laziness. Can I just encourage the moms and dads here, especially of young children? Maybe you've done this. There's grace for you too. But let me plead with you. Do not, and grandparents too, those of you that have young kids in your life, do not give your children a command and then give them a timer to count down to when they have to obey it. You know what I mean? I'm counting to 10, Johnny. Obey before I count to 10. 1, 2, 3. You know what you teach Johnny to do when you do that, parents and grandparents? You teach him to obey at 9. Kids are smart. They figure it out pretty quickly. They teach him to obey when your voice is raised. You teach them to obey when you threaten. But that is not biblical leadership. It is not grace to tolerate delayed obedience in your home. It is often laziness. Tolerating partial obedience in your home. You give your children an instruction and they obey part of the way. Tolerating that, not correcting that, is not grace. Now, as parents, especially if you're parents of young kids, make sure you give them simple commands that they can actually obey. Okay, so I wouldn't say to my 4-year-old, I want you to empty the dishwasher, and you've got 5 minutes. And if she only gets the top rack done, she's disobeyed. No, that's not leadership. That's unloving. But simple, clear, direct commands that they can obey at their age level and expect full obedience. And when they disobey, correct them in love. Parents, tolerating wrong-hearted obedience is not grace. It's laziness. If you allow your children to obey while complaining and grumbling and talking back, and you do not correct that behavior in some way, you are allowing your children to sin against Christ. Yes, it's easier to just overlook it. But parents, God has placed you in a position of authority in your home, and your calling is to lead them. To lead them. Can I just say to the parents in the room, please, please lead your children to be faithful in church attendance. Please. I know the common objection. I know, here's the objection. If I drag my kids to church, it'll harden their hearts. Here's what I would say to you, mother, father. Their hearts are already hardened if they don't want to come to church. It's already hard. And what's the only thing that God can use to soften hard hearts? It's the word preached from the people of God. So you pull your children away from the one thing that God has designed to soften their hearts. Parents, that's not wise. And listen to me. There's this myth that's going around that children leave the church when they get out of the home and they go to college. The Public Religion Research Institute did a study recently, and they found that 62% of young people who leave the Christian faith leave it before the age of 18. 62%. Parents, we didn't lose our children when they graduated from high school. We lost them before that. It only became evident afterwards. We lost them before. 62%. Parents, if you treat the church as optional, don't be surprised when your children treat Jesus as unnecessary. Lead your children. But the calling is not just for parents to lead, but to lovingly lead. To lovingly lead. Look at verse 21. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. In other words, it's possible to lead your children, moms and dads, it's possible to lead them in such a way that they're provoked and they're discouraged and they're ready to give up. Don't lead them that way. Lead them in love. So let me, if I can, give you what I think are some ways that parents provoke their children. Moms and dads, ways that we provoke our children. One would be to resort to physical or verbal abuse. I'm not talking about controlled, biblical, loving discipline that's not done in anger. I'm talking about verbal, physical abuse towards your children. Slapping them, disciplining them in anger, yelling at them, calling them names, publicly humiliating them, unhealthily teasing them. All of these things are ways that you provoke your children to give up. Moms and dads, that is not the way that we should lead. Loving leadership. That is not the way that Christ leads us. You provoke your children when you play favorites. Now, if you're parents and you have one child, this is kind of hard to do. But if you have more than one, favoritism is a very real temptation. Just read the Old Testament and look at the way favoritism destroyed families in the Old Testament. And it still destroys families today. One way we play favorites is by comparing one child to another. Johnny does this, but Jill does that. Man, wish that Jill would be like Johnny. I wish that Johnny would be like Jill. Parents, don't compare your children. Another way we play favorites is by pigeonholing our kids. And you put them in a little box and you say, she's the quiet one, he's the athletic one, she's like this, he's like that. And what they begin to hear is that dad likes this about my brother or my sister, therefore he must love him or her more than me. Don't pigeonhole your children. Here's another way that parents can provoke their children. When you make more withdrawals than deposits. Are you, moms and dads, even those of you with adult children, are you demanding more from them than you give to them? Do you demand more from them than you give to them? In order to make more deposits in their life, you need to be physically present. You need to be physically present with them. You need to spend time with your children. There's a myth going around. It goes something like this. You know, what do I want with my kids? Do I want quality time with my kids or quantity time with my kids? And there are some who say, well, no, what I need is quality time. I just need to have quality time. Here's the thing, moms and dads. You will not get quality time if you don't give them quantity time. You can't meet up with Johnny and say, all right, I haven't spent time with you in a month. Let's have quality time. You know what Johnny's going to say? No. He might not when he's 4, but he will when he's 14. If you want to make investments in the lives of your children, whether they're 4 or 40, spend time with them. Be with them. Can I tell you one of the reasons why God led us, I believe, to Pocosin Baptist Church 2 years ago is because I wanted to spend more time with my children. Our baby, Ella, had just been born. I was working 2 jobs and had been for 5 years. And I knew that I couldn't do it much longer and be able to invest in my kids the way that I wanted to. It hasn't been a perfect transition for me and my family, but by God's grace, I'm able to make deposits in my kids' lives every single week. Not perfectly, not as much as I might want to, but I'm making them. I'm physically present with them as often as I can be. It also means, though, moms and dads, and this is a real challenge in the digital age, you need to be not just physically present, but you need to be emotionally present. Moms and dads, you know this. You can be with your child and not with your child at the same time. How is this possible? This, right? This. You're spending time with your son, your daughter, but really what you're doing is updating your social media feed. Really what you're doing is checking your apps or your email. Can I tell you, your children notice that. They notice that. I've been humbled by the times that I've been with my children and they've asked me to put my phone away. Why do they do that? Because they see I'm not investing in them. I'm investing in the screen. I'm spending time with these people that aren't even really there and neglecting those that are with me. Parents, you need to be emotionally present with your kids. Here's another way that we provoke our kids, by being unnecessarily stern. Being a Christian mom and dad doesn't mean you have to be strict and say no to everything. Okay? I want you to think for just a moment about the Garden of Eden. How many no's did Adam and Eve get? It's one no. Don't eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The entire universe was yes and one no. Parents, you will need to say no to your children. If you're a Christian parent in the room, you will need to say no to your children more than your non-Christian friends will need to say no to theirs. So, say yes as often as you can. Say yes as often as you can. I struggle with this because my temptation is to say no more often than I should. And my wife reminds me, do we have to say no to that? And if she wants to lick the ice cream off the table. Is it really that big of a deal? Whatever. Go ahead, kid, lick up. Right? It's tempting for us to say no more than we need to. Is it a sin issue? If it's not, why are you drawing a line there, moms and dads? Why do we draw lines? Because it's easier for us, usually. Because we're so tempted to be selfish, even with our own children. One of the ways that we're too stern with our kids is by not having fun with them. So I like to roughhouse with my kids. There's actually scientific evidence for the beauty and the goodness of roughhousing. Anthony D. Bidinette and Larry Cohen wrote a book called The Art of Roughhousing. And they said that rather than making kids violent and impulsive, roughhousing makes kids smart, emotionally intelligent, lovable and likable, ethical, physically fit, and joyful. What he doesn't say is it also makes them scream a lot when dad hurts them. But that's just part of it. Okay? When we have roughhousing sessions in our home, somebody's crying at some point. And then after I'm done, the kids start crying. It's crazy. So we roughhouse. We have fun together. Now, again, I don't do this as well as I want to. There's so many days where I miss out on opportunities to have fun with my kids. But this is something I want to be as a dad. Being the father doesn't mean, or being a mom doesn't mean that you're stern, all business all the time. Get on the floor and play with them. Have fun. A couple other ways that we fight the temptation to be too stern with our kids. One is we teach them how to make appeals. If you have young kids, your kids need to know, when you give them an instruction, it is possible for them to say, "Mom, Dad, can I make an appeal?" Because especially as your kids grow, they begin to have some insight that you don't always have. So I might give one of my kids an instruction, and we've taught them to say, "Mom, Dad, can I make an appeal?" And they can tell us their appeal, and often we grant that appeal and we allow them to do something different than what we would have at first instructed. But they do it in a respectful, loving way. And the other thing that we've learned too, especially with little kids, is the beauty of a 5-minute warning. So you have little kids, and they're all in the play place having a great time. You say, "All right, time to go right now, out the door." I guarantee you that will not go well. So we learn, it took us a while to learn this, but we learn when we tell our kids 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, and we begin to prepare them, their minds begin to get ready, and it's much less stressful. It's really easier on everybody. And it's one way we can be not quite so stern and strict on our kids. Another way we provoke our kids is by being unhelpfully lenient. Being too lenient with them. Remember, moms and dads, you are the authority. I believe that kids thrive with clear boundaries. They want boundaries. It's God's gift to them to have these boundaries. So many of us, as parents, we're tempted to parent like a funnel. So you imagine you've got a wide part at the top and it gets narrower, okay? And we're tempted to do this. When our kids are young, we give them all sorts of freedom. And then they start to get older, and we start to constrict. Oh, they're teenagers now. Oh, no. And we tighten the rules, and we get stricter and stricter and stricter because we realize we're losing control. I think that biblically it should be the exact opposite. I think we should start very, very clear boundaries, very high rules and expectations. And as they grow, we teach them and we train them to make decisions as they mature. And we give them more and more freedom, more and more authority as they grow in age and maturity. So being unhelpfully lenient is a way to provoke your children. Being inconsistent. Moms and dads, few things will provoke your kids to discouragement more than being inconsistent with them. Saying one thing at church, doing something else at home. Treating one kid this way and the other kid that way. Being unpredictable in the way that you act with your kids. You will provoke them if you're not consistent with them. By being a hypocrite, you will provoke your kids. There was an article in Parenting Magazine a few years ago and said this, parenting no longer has to be a 24-hour-a-day job for the right price. Lots of parents, get this, lots of parents are choosing the iconic moments they enjoy with their kids than outsourcing other responsibilities to someone else. So, for instance, you can, for your children, purchase professional manners lessons ranging anywhere from $150 to $375. Get a professional manners consultant with your young child. This one, and I can't for the life of me figure out at what point someone says, "Oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up." But you can purchase professional potty training for your kids. You can purchase that. And there's webinars. I'm not sure what the webinar is going to do to help you. They're about $25 to $57. But you can get, and I don't know why the name of this, you can get the Discover Package. And that's $450, and they'll potty train your kids. I don't know what's going on. I just say, why would that want to be? Why would you want that to be your employment when you grow up? You can do, if you don't want to teach your kids how to ride their bike, you can purchase a 2-hour professional bike riding class, anywhere from $45 to $65. It is BYOB, though. You have to bring your own bike. Okay, so these are just some of the things you can outsource as a mom or a dad. But here's the thing. We laugh at these things, but how many Christian parents do the same thing spiritually? How many Christian parents outsource the spiritual development of their children to the church, to the professionals, to the ones that figured it out? That is not what God commands of mothers and fathers. You, moms and dads, you are the pastors in your homes. And you are called to lead your children to love Christ. A final way to provoke your children is to never say, "I'm sorry." And I would suggest that for some moms and dads in this room, the very first step of application for you would be to leave this service and say those two words to your son or your daughter for the ways that you have not parented as you should. Final thing we need to remember, if Jesus is going to be Lord over our family, we need to remember the reason for the family. The reason for the family. Why is it that children are supposed to obey mom and dad? He doesn't say, "Children, obey your parents in everything because they are amazing." He says, "Children, obey your parents in everything because this pleases Christ." In other words, children, your relationship with Jesus is bigger than your family. And notice verse 21. Why does he say, "Fathers, don't provoke your children"? Because they can be discouraged. Discouraged in what? Discouraged in following Jesus. So, in other words, moms, dads, there's something bigger than your family. And that something is a someone. His name is Jesus Christ. So your earthly family is a temporary shadow that points to the eternal family we have in Jesus Christ. Jesus is the only Son who ever obeyed Colossians 3 verse 20 perfectly. He is the only Son who fully obeyed His parents in everything and was fully pleasing to God the Father. God the Father is the only Father who has ever lovingly led His Son perfectly. And yet, that perfect eternal relationship between Father, Son, and Spirit, that perfect relationship was broken. Why? Not because of the sin of the Son, not because of the sin of the Father, but because of the sin of the church. Because of your sin and mine. And Jesus Christ, in His infinite mercy and grace, He who obeyed perfectly in everything, He became sin and took upon Himself your sin and mine and died on that cross. And 3 days later, the Father resurrected Christ and now invites every single one of us to become a part of the family of God. Can I tell you something, church? We care about families at Pocosin Baptist, but we care far more about Christ. The reason we care about families is because we care about Christ. So if you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, being a great parent will not make you happy. It won't. There will still be sadness and emptiness there. You can be the best parent on the planet and it will not fulfill you. Only Christ can be your greatest treasure. Parents, can I just encourage you? The pressure is off. Your standing with Jesus is not based on your successes or your failures as a parent. Your standing with Jesus is based on Jesus' complete and perfect obedience and death and resurrection. That is incredibly good news. You ever watch American Idol? For a few years, it was the most popular show on television. And you know, it was probably had to have been for the contestants one of the most one of those shows that really got to them emotionally, right? It was one of those shows that it had to be terrifying to be on there because one wrong note, one slip up, and Simon's freaking out, right? When you mess up once and you're off the show, you get it right, your whole life could be changed. There are major singers that we only know because of American Idol, right? So this is a major thing. It's incredibly difficult and painful. But at the end of the show, after the victor had been crowned, he or she would sing one more time. And there was always something about that last song, because this time the singer was no longer singing to us. The singer was singing because he or she had won. The singer was no longer singing for victory. The singer was singing from victory. The pressure was off, and the singer could simply belt it out and use his or her gifts to the fullest without fear of what might happen, because the victory had already been won. Parents, the victory has already been won. If your faith is in Christ, the pressure's off. Yes, the way that you parent matters, but it doesn't affect what matters most. So belt it out and be as faithful as you can be to what the Word of God commands, because Christ has already done it perfectly in your place. Would you pray with me?